is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day where we deal with an explosive racial issue. It's the issue of whether or not white women get special coverage as victims, as opposed to the many, many victims of color. Native American victims, BIPOC, people from the black, indigenous, and people of color communities, people who do not get the same kind of attention. Is this a legitimate issue, or is it just nonsense? We will talk about that with Professor Wilfred Riley, frequent, very popular guest of this show from Kentucky State University. We'll also be speaking later today about another group that is courageously opposing bigotry and political correctness. On what issue? The issue of Columbus Day, which is coming up in just a little bit more than a week. We'll be speaking about whether, if you know Columbus, that means there should be no Columbus. But first off, there is a great deal of debate going on about the future of the country, the future of your 401k, the future of whatever you've put away for a child or grandchild's college education. The economy of the United States, even though the market was up most of the day today and was up at the end of the session by about 70 points on the Dow, even though that is happening and maybe things are just going to be okay eventually, there is a great deal of worry by people who are very well informed about what is going on about a looming crash, which it's necessary to talk about. The government's funding is set to expire at 12:01 a.m. on Friday, which would partially shut down the government. If Congress does not act, lawmakers who are feuding over who is responsible for raising the debt limit and avoiding a potentially catastrophic default, absent swift action, the Treasury Secretary, I've read columns from her before, the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, notified Congress this month that the Treasury might be unable to keep paying all of the government's bills on time during October. The next few days will be a time of intensity, so said House Speaker Nancy Pelosi in a Saturday letter she sent out to House Democrats. Here is what she said on ABC's This Week program about the Democrats' insistence on going forward with their reconciliation, reckless $3.5 trillion tax and spending spree. She says, well, it's not about dollars because it's magic money. Why? Listen to clip 15.
So again, the Senate and the House, those who are not in full agreement with the president's, right? Let's see what our value, let's not talk about numbers, let's and dollars, let's talk about values.
Let's not talk about numbers and dollars? If you're the Congress of the United States and you're responsible for taxing and spending, Who is going to talk about numbers? I mean, this is nutty. And then there is the Catherine Rampell of the Washington Post, who is critical of her fellow voices in the media. Why? Because they actually focus on the price tag of $3.5 trillion, which really, you think about how much money that is. What a huge percentage of everything that people earn and work to build in the course of a year. So where's that money come from? Well, Catherine Rampell thinks we talk too much about the price tag. Clip 8.
My number one priority would be more discussion of what's actually in the bill, as opposed to this top line figure, which itself is misleading, of $3.5 trillion. There are good ways to spend a huge sum of money. There are bad ways to spend a huge sum of money. But the kind of media coverage that we've been getting doesn't really explore whether the kinds of things that are in this bill are meritorious or not. I'd love to see more people commenting about, should we invest in childcare this way or paid leave that way or in climate? Instead, right. It's about the number.
And why is the number misleading? Why is that $3.5 trillion figure misleading?
Because it doesn't really represent anything. It's this weird shorthand that's been used, but in fact, the bill itself will not cost $3.5 trillion in the sense that it will be entirely or at least partly paid for. So the actual cost in terms of deficits will be smaller than that, perhaps even zero, although I think that's unlikely.
Okay, perhaps even zero? You see, when you say something is paid for, what that means is that the change that you're making is itself generating enough money to come in and pay for the cost of what you're spending. Now, by the way, it's true. Republicans, including President Trump and including President Bush, both have the record of having said, or have on the record, that, well, the tax cuts wouldn't cost anything because they would generate more money that would pay for the reduction in revenue from the tax cuts. Now, that didn't quite happen. It is certainly true that tax cuts created more revenue, but not enough more revenue to make up for the revenue that the tax cuts, letting people keep more of the money themselves that they earned, made. But see, that's different from what the Democrats are saying. What the Democrats are saying, if you want to say that it was preposterous for Republicans to exist to predict that there would be more money generated from the tax cuts, but the Democrats aren't even doing that because they're not talking about any new government program that is going to be generating revenue, producing more money. What they're talking about is taking more money out of the private economy. And it's a very, very different situation, a very different approach. On Meet the Press, Senator Cory Booker was, again, trying to defend the Biden claim that the massive spending they're talking about is not really a progressive wish list. Listen.
Didn't the Democratic voters essentially send the message, do what's possible? They didn't pick the progressive candidates.
Yeah, they picked a moderate guy
right. Who
has a great track record for getting big things done in the Senate. And that's why Joe Biden was joking with us in the White House. He's like, this bill is not a progressive wish list. This is an American wish list. I said bipartisanship, when you pull the parts with Republicans, what he is doing is wildly popular with the Republican Americans who want child care and affordable college and affordable daycare. Yeah. They want to make sure that we're meeting the challenge of climate change.
Okay, the idea that this is wildly popular with Republicans, the polls do not show that. And this gets very confusing, and I think some of the confusion is deliberate. The Democrats are actually trying to confuse people. It's confusing because what is wildly popular with Americans is the infrastructure bill. It has bipartisan support. A majority of Republicans do support the infrastructure bill. They think it's important to spend money on actually building stuff and repairing highways and bridges and airports and it actually creating jobs with all of that. And that infrastructure bill, which has already been passed with bipartisan support in the Senate, they could pass today in the House. But it's the lefties who refuse to do this because they want so much more. They don't want to stop at $1 trillion, which is the cost of the infrastructure bill. Oh, no. They want to go up to that $3.5 trillion figure. Now, by what magic does that count as nothing? If you have an answer to that, you can give us a call, 1-800-955-1776. More the issue of racism, always explosive, coming up on The Medved Show. On the Michael Medved show, the talking about the looming financial crisis in Washington. We'll get your calls in just a moment. A vote to raise the debt limit does not authorize new spending. And this is the Wall Street Journal. The journal makes clear, instead, it essentially allows the Treasury Department to raise money to pay for expenses the government has already authorized. Democrats said that lifting the debt ceiling should be done on a bipartisan basis and noted that they voted with Republicans to do so under former President Donald Trump's administration. The fiscal fights are competing for oxygen in Congress, with Democrats' biggest legislative push, which is trying to pass two major packages, caught up in a struggle between the party's centrist and liberal wings, and which is precisely why they can't generate enough unity to go forward and go ahead and raise the debt ceiling on their own, which would make clear, at least to everybody, that this fact of that they were acting like the majority party, which by the barest of margins, they are in both houses. Let's go to John in Sammamish, Washington. John, you're on the Medved Show.
Hi, Michael. Not to blaspheme your moniker, but we're the dumbest nation on God's green earth. As a minority business owner, and I'm a black man, every month I sit down with my employees and we look at what we brought in and what went out. And then we determine if we need to look at our budget in terms of expenditures for new equipment, hiring another person. I incorporate our budget with the employees because I want them to understand if we don't have it, we can't spend it. And the new math is killing business owners like me. We're tired of the fantasy. There's no fantasy. You either bring it in and then it goes out. You have nothing left. I'm worried. I'm worried. I'm tired of the politicians making us run for the tall grass. Do you know what that means when you run for the tall grass? That means
you're hiding.
You're hiding. They want us to run, especially blacks, run for the tall grass, run to the plantation. If you don't stay on the plantation, then you're not going to be not for us. It makes me sick to my stomach at the stupidity. Folks, I'm pleading with you, business people. There's no money out there. People like myself, we're not spending our money because we're worried. We're worried for the future. We're worried for our children. We're worried for our business associates. We're worried for the United States. When you say 10,000 Haitians, that's more like 20,000, 30,000. When you say 100,000 Afghanis that are here or going to be here, it's going to be 200,000. Where does the money come from? We don't have it. You can't just keep on printing money and think that it's going to end well. I just can't go to my bank account if I don't have any money. I can't go and get another loan and put myself upside down, and then I have to lay off my employees. That's why we're stupid as a nation. I plead with people, business owners. We get together every month and we talk about this nonsense. Business people, we save our money. Unless they kill us, we're going to save our money because the future is not determined. There's nothing over the horizon. I'm telling
okay,
people.
Look, I think you speak for a lot of people, John. And I appreciate your passion, and it's perfectly appropriate. part of the difficulty here is that we've had in the very last months of the Trump administration, we had, I forget how many trillions of dollars, it was over $1 trillion of new spending for COVID relief. And remember, everybody was going to get, they didn't quite get it. They got the rest of it under Biden. Everybody got checks in the mail from the government. And this was supposed to help us with the pandemic. And part of the difficulty here is that with all the help with the pandemic is still raging. And it doesn't appear that it's going to go away at a at any immediate point in the direct future. People are talking about maybe this time next year, things will start looking, quote, back to normal. But that's a great deal of time. And with all of this going on in Washington, are there people who are viewing this as more and more and more pandemic relief, except it's for more than that? It's providing daycare and junior college for every American. Now, that may be a very popular goal, but does every American want to take advantage of that goal? And what about the people who already are struggling and paying their own bills to provide some of the preschool and the pre-K education? I mean, these should be separate debates, not all rolled into one gigantic package that is supposed to be for climate change and economic relief and everything else. The difficulty is there's also, remember, the Democrats had spoke very passionately about the need for reparations. Is this kind of redistribution also have a racial tinge and it's supposed to be part of reparations? The point that John is making, which I think most Americans are doing, we don't have the money. There's no money tree. And the idea that it's going to help the economy to take higher taxes out of businesses. Look, the tax system needs to be rationalized. It needs to be more transparent. It needs to be more simple without special breaks for special interests or special industries. That for sure. But the idea that we will benefit by taking away the profit people make in investment or the profit that people make at working hard, doing the work that people want to pay for or making the products that people want to buy, that is a completely misleading idea. Talk about misleading ideas. There is a great deal of talk about the missing white girl syndrome, claiming that it is only when white girls go missing that they get attention. That is not the fact. Leading black academic, Wilfred Riley of Kentucky State University, will give his unique and very needed perspective on that issue coming right up on the MedVet Show. On the Michael Medved Show, it's always a pleasure to welcome back Wilfred Riley to this show. He's an American political scientist who's also assistant professor of political science at Kentucky State University. And he holds both a PhD in political science and a law degree from the University of Illinois. He is the author of the tremendous book and eye-opening and occasionally shocking book, Hate Crime Hoax. Wilfred, right now there's a great deal of talk. Nicole Hannah-Jones, the creator of the 1619 Project, Pulitzer Prize-winning creator of the 1619 Project, has been talking a great deal about the missing white girl syndrome. Is it true that that white women get a disproportionate amount of attention when they go missing?
Not really. From a social science standpoint, it's interesting to look at ideas like this. And I find that what you often see in kind of mainstream, especially left-leaning media, is extremely simplified. So at the most basic level, when attention is paid to someone who disappears, it seems like white women do get a bit more attention. There are a couple papers that look at this. But the two caveats are, one, that effect, as far as I can tell, goes away if you adjust for basic things like social class and prominence. And the second point is that the majority of disappearances, the 99.98% majority probably of those of whites, so the 99.99% for people of color get no attention at all. And a final point is that one of the reasons that there's a reluctance to talk about missing women of color, I think, is that we're in the middle of kind of this woke, sort of racially revisionist moment, and most of the people that caused the disappearance of a black or Native American woman are also going to be themselves black or Native American. So there's no shortage of coverage whatsoever if, for example, a white cop kills a black woman.
Uh-huh. So basically, when you talk about other qualities of prominence or wealth or status that people in that situation, obviously, if they go missing, they get more attention. I was wondering the same thing, and I imagine you have, before they even found out that Gabby Petito was dead. She was a media obsession. She'd been all over the internet. And I wondered, what is it about this girl? And then you look at the pictures. Do you think that her attractiveness might have had something to do with this?
Well, yeah, of course. She's a beautiful, charismatic, young, party-going, you know, socially adept blonde that ran her own business on social media. I mean, what you very often see when journalists or even academics tackle questions like this is what's called univariate analysis. It's sort of a crude link. People will say, well, the black cases get 50% more coverage. This is racism. But in fact, you see that a bunch of things, I mean, beauty, popularity, age, have a much bigger effect. So, I mean, of course, if Gabby Petito had been a 60-year-old working-class Italian-American woman with no dislike for that demographic at all, but this case would have received none of the coverage that it received. Whereas if Gabby Petito had been a black Miss America, this case would have received very nearly the same level of coverage. So it's important to, as I sometimes say, be multivariate. Look at all the things that are in play here. Why does no one ever cover disappeared men, for example, who are mostly, you know, ugly folks involved in the gang or mob scene? There's a very obvious answer there, although it's a bit awkward to discuss.
And the interesting thing is, why would there anyone assume that it would be helpful if a woman, be she white or black or Latino or any, that somehow it is advantageous for that ethnic group to have their victims receive a great deal of coverage? Why is that necessarily a good thing?
Well, it's not, first of all, but I think there are two points here. One, which I think you both touched on, is that it's not unusual at all for there to be racial differences in coverage of a certain sector of life. So, for example, right now we're looking at conflict between the police and African Americans. So a case in which a white officer shoots a black individual, especially if they're unarmed, is going to receive literally dozens of times more coverage than a case where a black officer shoots a white individual, like the Bron Cruz matter in Utah. But this is not infrequent at all. So in the case of these quote-unquote vanished white women, there is a slight gap, but we also know why. It comes down to popularity, comes down to class, so perceived class, all these other things. And, I mean, as to your question, is there an advantage to being thought of as, you know, heavily represented among criminals or murder victims? I mean, no. This is simply taking one small piece of the picture, which is that media coverage varies all across the board. Hispanics are the focus of the illegal immigration discussion, although there are plenty of illegal immigrants from Eastern Europe, or as we just saw, Haiti. But taking one small facet of this complex debate and saying, see, racism's here too. And this is something that the left and sometimes the hard right do pretty frequently in the media. It doesn't really provide anything, as far as I can tell, of use to the debate.
And by the way, you made a very useful suggestion I saw in your Twitter stream that you had on this issue. You point this out. You point that last point here. Someone like Joy Reid is the media, and she's one of the first voices that was raised on this. She, of course, a leading black journalist. She has one of the highest rated shows on non-Fox News television. And that if she wants to start covering black women more who are disappeared or victimized or beaten up or murdered, do you think she will?
Well, I certainly hope she does. I mean, those cases, why not give them a little more coverage, even if the reasons that they're not as heavily covered have little to do with racism? Why not publicize these women in a true crime fashion? But this is the point. I've also made this point, you know, jokingly but seriously, to Fox or Newsmax anchors that I'm casually friendly with online. I mean, when people say, well, the media is not doing this, it's kind of like, well, you have a top 10 show. You are the media. I mean, Joy Reid, even perhaps above that level of prominence, is one of the lead figures on MSNBC. I mean, they are ranked below Fox and CNN right now, but perhaps a million viewers every night. If she thinks that there are truly a large number of stories of, you know, non-gang affiliated, personable young black women that have vanished recently, there may well be, why doesn't she cover those stories? And the answer probably is that there are more eyeballs and rage clicks and so on and accusations of racism than in actually bringing a bunch of dull, competent cops on the show and talking about, you know, a domestic violence case in Cleveland. So I hope she does, but I don't think she's going to move the focus of the show away from wild allegations about the Republicans to, you know, disappeared college students and how we might be able to find them. That would be a financially insane thing to do.
And look, this is all very important. There's another case that you will find very interesting that we're going to go over to about something that I do suspect is going to get a great deal of media attention. There's a very striking blonde young woman, very white and very accomplished. She is a graduate of Caltech University, and she has a fairly extensive criminal record, and she's just been arrested for starting a fire in California. She could be looking at 9 years in prison, a fire that claimed 41 homes. Will she get a certain amount of media attention? My guess is she will. You know about this case, Wilfred?
Yeah, I've seen it in passing, and people are already calling her things like the beautiful arsonist and the lovely firebug and so on. Yeah, again, I don't think race. See, you can Google it. I mean, race, I don't think race is a top 10 variable here. I mean, one of the most widely covered short stories I've seen recently was a beautiful Hispanic woman leaning out of the window of a car shooting an AK-47 at someone on a California freeway. And this didn't get a massive amount of, you know, full news cycle coverage. The people on Twitter were saying things like, you know, from now on, this is an L.A. Warlord Queen fan account. You know, this picture is very easy to find online, and, you know, millions of clicks and accesses. And the reason for that is that the person is an extremely attractive woman. And when you think about someone who might be shooting, you know, a powerful firearm during a gang fight, you're not thinking of
That's not who you think of. But you should think of Wilfred Riley for getting clarity and common sense. We'll be right back. Part of what we try to do on this show, on the Michael Medved Show, is to provide a context for some of the troubling events that we undergo in this country. And that means knowing the country's history, not just the history of the recent past, what happened in the last election, the election before that, but what the overall patterns have been in American life. And that you will find accessible to you for free as a MedHead Plus member, because MedHead Plus membership not only gives you access to this broadcast every day, but a membership which ends up costing less than 20 cents a day, that membership is available to you to provide a download, ability to download any of our 200 hours of history broadcasts about the American Revolution or about the original settlement of the United States of America, or issues like slavery, or the Civil War and its causes, or the decision to enter World War One, and much, much more. It's all there. And particularly political information about the emergence of third parties and the most successful and least successful political campaigns in American history. Check it out at Medhead Plus membership. You can find that at michaelmedved.com or go to medvedhistorystore.com and see what we have to offer, and join us at minimal cost and maximum benefit at michaelmedved.com. Okay, there's a great deal of eco-craziness that is going on, including a naked interview with the New Yorker in which an eco-terrorist, self-identified, named Andreas Malm, called for activists to embrace destruction and terror. Listen.
So many investments are still being poured into new fossil fuel projects. So I am in favor of destroying machines, property, not harming people. That's a very, very important distinction there. And I think property can be destroyed in all manner of ways, or it can be neutralized in a very gentle fashion, as when we deflated the SUVs, or in a more spectacular fashion, as in potentially blowing up a pipeline that's under construction. That's something that people have done.
So you are recommending blowing up a pipeline?
Okay, again, what's extraordinary here is he's in favor of blowing up pipelines, property, vehicles, but not in favor of harming people. I mean, how absurd is that? If you burn someone's home down, how do you not harm that person? If you destroy someone's property, how is that not injuring that individual? Of course it is. And this goes to the strange case that we were talking about briefly with Wilfred Riley, the case of a woman who's described as a Palo Alto scientist who set the Shasta fire that has claimed 41 homes. And this is not her first criminal offense. This is truly amazing. And this is, again, one of my favorite headlines from the last 24 hours. The headline in the New York Post says, shaman charged with starting California wildfire after allegedly boiling bear urine. Okay, let that sink in for a moment. First of all, I don't think bear urine is flammable, unless the bear has consumed a great deal of alcohol beforehand, and even probably not then. Here is a story. A California shaman charged with starting a wildfire that is threatening thousands of homes claimed it started by accident while she was boiling bear urine to drink, according to local reports. Alexandra Suvernava, who is 30, faces up to 9 years in prison for allegedly sparking the Fawn Fire, which has destroyed 41 homes and 90 smaller structures and is threatening 2,340 others. She's pleaded not guilty. She is now being eyed for possibly starting many other fires across the Golden State, according to the Reading Record Searchlight. As the fire in Shasta County raged on Wednesday, Suvernava claimed she had been hiking and trying to get to Canada, according to documents in the newspaper. She told forest officials that she was thirsty and had come across a puddle of what she believed to be bear urine and tried to make a fire to boil it, according to documents obtained by the outlet. Now, I didn't know that even for environmentalists that bear urine was a thing, but apparently it is. She found that the bear urine was too wet for the fire to start. So she downed the water that she thought was animal urine and continued on her merry way. Suvernava eventually got trapped in the brush amid the inferno that she had lit and had to call the fire department to rescue her. She was asked to empty her pockets and fanny pack, which had CO2 cartridges, a cigarette lighter, and an item containing, quote, a green leafy substance she admitted to smoking that day. Well, there's a surprise. Workers at a nearby quarry reported seeing a woman toss two small COT cartridges that matched the ones found in her bag on the same day the Fawn fire ignited. On her LinkedIn, Suvarneva lists shaman as her current occupation and indicates that she was a doctoral student at SUNY's State University of New York's New York College of Environmental Sciences and Forestry. An attorney for Suvarneva told her initial court hearing that a possible mental health crisis may have played a role in her actions, as well as, quote, something to do with drug abuse. She is also under suspicion for starting other fires, said the attorney, who was not identified. There's a high possibility she is responsible for a fire that was set the previous evening, too. It is my experience, said the local sheriff, that the arsonist will light multiple fires in a short time frame. Part of what is so remarkable about this is that when you read about her background, if what she has posted on LinkedIn and elsewhere is true, she graduated from California Institute of Technology, Caltech, which is one of the most exclusive and competitive universities in the country. She says she graduated in 2012 with degrees in chemistry and biology. She enrolled in that PhD program at State University of New York. She has then worked in medicinal chemistry as a research associate in the biotech companies Gilead Sciences in Foster City, a real company, and NanoSyn in Santa Clara. She is also a Palo Alto yoga instructor, certified scuba dive master, piano teacher, and camp counselor. She most recently tutored Bay Area students in the sciences at Palo Alto's AJ Tutoring, a respected SAT test prep business. Knowing what you know about her right now, would you want her actually to be tutoring your kids? My guess is not. She also has run into many legal troubles before. In Santa Clara County, court records show that she faced misdemeanor charges in 2017 and criminal charges, felony charges in 2015. Earlier this month, September, Suvarneva was arrested on Interstate 5 near Red Bluff and booked into the Tehama County Jail on suspicion of driving under the influence of alcohol and drugs and obstructing and resisting arrest. A week later, she was arrested in coastal Oregon for criminal trespass, which means unlawfully entering another's enclosed or fenced-in property. Earlier in the day that the Fawn fire was ignited, Suvarneva was seen trespassing on the property of a quarry and asked to leave. That's where she found the bear urine. She ignored the warning and continued walking into the hills, according to a report filed by Cal Fire. The inquiry employee reported she was acting strangely. I think that's probably a high probability. That evening, as firefighters were battling flames, she walked out of the brush and asked for water and medical help, according to the Cal Fire report. She said she had been hiking. Suvarneva was arrested by Cal Fire after discovery of COT cartridges and a cigarette lighter in her possession. What is the indication here? It doesn't matter how educated you are, doesn't matter how qualified you are, all your interesting hobbies, insanity counts or can count even more in this greatest nation on God's green earth.